Today on The Grave Talks, Ghosts in the Forest, a conversation with Jay Gridley. Forests can be magical places to a child, sprawling, seemingly never-ending enclosure of trees. Unlike any other site, a world with colors, creatures, feelings. For Jay Gridley, the forest was a place just like that while growing up. However, his forest contained far more than just animals, leaves, trees, and rocks. It was home to a group of friends, spirit friends, that he would never forget. This is his story today on The Grave Talks.
Well, it started for me back when I was probably 5 or 6 years old. Growing up, I grew up out in the middle of the woods in the Finger Lakes and here in upstate New York. And it was one of those settings where, you know, I grew up in a trailer out in the middle of the woods with my parents, my brother, and my nearest neighbor was, you know, a good, you know, half mile to a mile away. And so there wasn't much for us to do. So I would spend a lot of time out in the woods playing, you know, kind of, you know, building forts and playing with the other kids around and kind of, you know, chasing animals and stuff like that. Well, one day I was out, you know, playing with some of the neighbor kids, and my brother came out to get me to come home for lunch. And when he came out, you know, he heard me laughing and talking and kind of causing a ruckus. And he asked what I was doing. And I'm like, oh, we're playing tag. And he's like, well, who? And I'm like, well, me and my friends here. And he kind of looked around, and I looked around too, and I saw everybody taking off, feeling, you know, like they were scared. And he's like, well, there's nobody here. I'm like, well, it's those guys right there. And he kind of gave me the classic, you know, well, you know, I really wouldn't talk about this. You know, this is something that, you know, if mom and dad found out, you know, they're going to send you away. You're going to think you're crazy.
Yeah.
And so once, yeah, so once that kind of classic story. So once I, you know, had that experience, I kind of shut things down a little bit. I didn't talk about it because it kind of scared me because I didn't want to be sent away. So throughout childhood and like my elementary school days, you know, I went to school in very small towns, you know, like, you know, Branchport, New York, Peña, New York, which are all, you know, right there in the middle of the Finger Lakes in upstate New York. Yeah. You know, I would see things, you know, I would see people come in the room that nobody else would see, you know, because they wouldn't react to them. And they would kind of like look at me kind of weird and like, you know, walk back out again. I wouldn't think anything about it. I thought it was normal. I would see UFOs. I once saw a UFO crash into a hillside. And when I tried telling my teacher about it and have her, you know, look at it, this is back when I was probably in the second grade. And I would have her, you know, look out the window and I would point right to where I was seeing, you know, the smoke and the fire and stuff. And she would say there was nothing there. And so those are my earliest recollections. Stuff would happen, you know, throughout growing up. That kind of directed me to spend, you know, a lot of time kind of more reclusive about it. So I would, you know, always was like fascinated with like old churches, you know, abandoned buildings, cemeteries, stuff like that. I would spend a lot of time there. I had a lot of good first dates in cemeteries. You know, I would take girls and they were always good first dates because they never, you know, resulted in a second. But, you know, that's kind of where I had my, you know, a lot of my experiences growing up. And then in 2000, I moved up here to Rochester, New York. And when I did that, there was a free publication up here called Free Time Magazine. And what Free Time Magazine was, is it was a private publication. It was just like a small, you know, paper magazine. And it would just advertise, you know, what's going to go on in the city, you know, this month, you know, as far as bands or restaurants. Stuff like that. But in the back of it, they always had like these classifieds. And so I would look in the classifieds, and when I first moved up here, I saw a classified for looking for paranormal investigators. And I was kind of really confused by that, and I was also interested. And so I called the number. Well, I got a guy, a very colorful guy, and we kind of started talking, and I was interested, so I joined his group. And this was back in, I don't know, I would say early 2000s. I can't remember the exact year.
Yeah.
And then I investigated with, you know, them and their group for a while and kind of was fascinated. There were other people like me that were seeing things, because back in those days, you know, there weren't any paranormal shows.
Yeah.
You know, there were old classic horror movies and stuff like that. But to me, they were just movies. And so this is before any paranormal shows came about. And yeah, we were doing, you know, private investigations and stuff. And it was fascinating to me. But then after about a year to 18 months in that group, I kind of was starting to develop my own style that I liked, that I liked to follow. There were things that they were doing that I didn't really care for. And so that's when I kind of broke off and started creating my own groups. And since then, you know, I created multiple groups. Each one had kind of like a different discipline.
Yeah.
And I was trying to find my way, you know, in like the paranormal world that all of a sudden I just, you know, realized existed, you know, that people were actually following this stuff and were interested in this stuff. And yeah. And so then, you know, I started a group right around 2010 or so called Life After Death Paranormal. Mm-hmm. I had that going for a few years. I found some like-minded people. That one was probably directed more towards, I don't want to say an aggressive, but more an upfront approach of investigating, where it was more kind of like ghost adventures, like with Zach Bagans, kind of like that style.
Uh-huh.
And so that went a few years, and members, you know, kind of came and went, and I wasn't feeling real good about it. So I figured we needed a facelift. And so I changed things because I wanted to go more spiritual, and because I'm a very spiritual guy, and kind of that's when I kind of changed the name and went from Life After Death Paranormal to Upstate Paranormal Society, which I did, and that was a lot more spiritual. And that's kind of, I started working with a lot more mediums and psychics, and I at that time joined a mediumship development group up here in the Rochester area. I had a Native American elder that was my teacher, and she taught me more than I could ever imagine. She unlocked so many doors for me, and it's really blown my mind. It's kind of 98% of what I know is from the skills that she taught me. Not as far as ghost hunting, but she taught me how to meditate. She taught me how to, this is kind of getting sidetracked, but she taught me how to meditate. She taught me how to connect with my spirit guides. She explained who my spirit guides were, who were also Native American. And she explained how they could help me and teach me things. Well, at that point, I started to meditate quite often. And when I did that, I would, you know, be meditating. And then all of a sudden in my mind, in my own voice, I would start like hearing my voice talking to me, but they were saying things that just blew my mind. And then after 20 minutes, this is all during our mediumship circle. After about 20 minutes, you know, she would start to bring us out of it. And when I came out of it, I would just be in tears just because I was just blown away by what, you know, by what spirits were telling me. And my spirit guides were telling me, and they wanted to teach me. They felt that this was a path that I needed to go on. And so that's something that just fueled my interest even more and my passion for this, you know, for this industry. But then back to the original question. So then after the Upstate Paranormal Society, it kind of same thing as Life After Death Paranormal. It kind of played out. I was still kind of experimenting with things, and this is the more spiritual group. That one kind of I hate saying fizzled out, but it kind of, the life expectancy of it kind of ran out.
Yeah.
And I felt that I was still evolving. And so that's when I'm like, okay, I'm going to take the best of both worlds. I'm going to take parts of Life After Death Paranormal, parts of Upstate Paranormal Society, and I'm going to create one more group. And that's where I came up with New York Paranormal. And once I created New York Paranormal, I took members of Life After Death Paranormal, members of Upstate Paranormal Society, and I created this group at the best of both worlds. And I have just the perfect mix, you know, of spiritual, of investigative, that I could find, and people that I've been working with for, you know, over 10 years plus,
yeah.
You know, they're in this group with me now. And, through the wonder of media and social media, you know, I've put myself there out there quite a bit, and I've attracted a lot more new talent as well.
Yeah.
And so right now in my group in New York Paranormal, I have 33 members, and they are a mix of, you know, psychics, psychic mediums, regular paranormal investigators, and skeptics. I believe always have quite a few skeptics. I have two witches that I have in the group as well. And so I have a nice little group to, to work with. And we're very close. Our investigations are very lighthearted, but they're very professional. Sure. We're very, very like a family atmosphere. There's a lot of laughing. There's a lot of, talking about life, outside of paranormal. And we're all very involved with each other, outside of the paranormal.
Sure. And it's always good to have a group like that where you can have that connection beyond just we're all looking for ghosts. There's a lot to unpack here that you just talked about. So let's take a pause and let's go back and talk about some of those things that you had just mentioned. So I want to go back to one of the first things you talked about, which was the kids. You're out there playing tag in the woods. Yes. You're seeing these people as plain as day, I'm assuming. You're not thinking there's anything ghostly about them, right?
Right. Yeah, because, children at a very young age, when they're born, are mostly born with a clairvoyant, gift.
Yeah.
And and they all have, you've always heard, like kids are more sensitive to spirits, animals are more sensitive, et cetera. Yeah, well, I was the same way. And we all have that gift as a child. But then once it gets clouded, by society, that talks about how, you're crazy if you see things, things aren't real, ghosts aren't real. There's stuff like that over the years, it will cloud a person's, sensitivities, and they eventually kind of take a back seat in your mind. And that happens quite a bit. So when I was born, I did have, clairvoyant gift.
Yeah.
And I still remember the kids clear as day. They're always the same ones. They were always the same. There was two boys and three girls, and they were always dressed the exact same. And they always came from the same direction. And would be willing to bet that they're still there now. And, so that was something that I've always had. I've always paid attention to. And when I never actually, shut it off, it did get kind of lessened quite a bit, but it was something that just through my personal interest I always was looking for anything strange, anything different, anything that other people didn't see, anything that I thought might have been paranormal. At the time I didn't know the word paranormal, but now I can explain it as that's what I was looking for.
So when you were out there and you were playing with these kids, did they vocalize? Did they talk to you? Did you have interaction with them just like other kids? Yeah.
Just like regular, 5 and 6 year olds that you see at a school.
When you think about how they dressed and things of that nature, and you look back on it, was their dress of our time at the time when were playing, or was it different?
Yep. No, it was of our time. This is going back and to like the very, very early 80s, going back from like 80 to 81. Yeah, to me, they just looked absolutely normal. I saw nothing different in them. They just looked like the kids at school. I just didn't know who they were. And then they would talk to me. They never talked about themselves. They would always, talk, just want to play is what they want to do. They just wanted to play.
If you went back there today, do you think that you would be able to pick up on them or sense them?
Yes, I think I would be able to feel them because I still am able to feel when a spirit is near or if a spirit enters the room. I don't have the clairvoyance that I used to have. Mm-hmm. Once in a great while, I will be able to. But I think that's when the spirit has enough energy and their vibration is high enough to where they allow me to see them. But as far as the kids in the woods, I would be able to know that they were there. I would be able to know if they could see me, but I don't think I'd be able to connect with them again like I used to.
Have you ever attempted to go back?
No, because since then the house has left our family and has been, gone through a few different people. It's been developed a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I haven't tried it.
So you'd be the strange guy in the woods looking for the ghost children today. What are you doing here, sir? Looking for the ghost children I used to play with.
I would definitely make the local newspaper. We'll see.
To us, it's like, oh, okay, sure. But to the average person wandering back, they're asking you the questions that might not go over as well.
Exactly. When you see some stranger back in the in the woods talking to the trees, it definitely raises an eyebrow to a lot of people.
Let me ask you this, because obviously they appeared as plain as day to you. Was there ever confusion at that point in your life as to who was physically there to everyone versus you? Like you said, you know, sometimes you'd see someone walk into a room or this or that. Was there times where you're like, I don't know if other people can see this or not?
No, to me, it was normal. It was just seeing just...
Sure, it was normal to you, but yeah. I'm asking, was there a way, was there moments where, you know, you saw something and you pointed it out to somebody, assuming they were seeing it too? Meaning, like, could you tell when it was something that only you were seeing versus something that everybody else was able to see?
I could tell by how I felt.
Okay.
Because I've always had the same alarms in my body, on my chest. I would get very tight. I would lose my breath. I would feel like someone is pushing on my chest. And I just got the feeling. I just had, like, the connection with the spirit because they knew I could see them. And I had that mental connection and the psychic and the spiritual connection with them. But I would never talk to people about it because I didn't want to come across as weird or you know, alarm anybody.
Sure. When you look back on those days of playing with those kids, you got to wonder, who were they? Why were they there? What sort of conclusions have you come to?
I believe that they were kids that were connected to the land, and they were there much, much earlier than I was. But I felt that when they connected with me, they kind of conformed to what I thought was normal. Mm-hmm. And so that's when they approached me as kind of lost children. I wouldn't call them black-eyed kids or anything, but I think they were just lost. I think they were out in the woods. I think they were together, and they just saw me as somebody that they could connect with, as someone that could actually see them back. And that's when they approached me, and I felt they felt safe with me.
This is an interesting opinion-based question. Do you think that when you have something like that, like the spirits of children that are out there kind of mm-hmm. lost, you know, looking for playmates, looking for connection, just as we do in the real world when we're alive, you know, it seems that spirits do the same thing on the other side. But do we age on the other side? And age is one thing. I mean, there's physical aging, but then of course there's mental aging as well. And I'm not saying in a deteriorative way, but more so a growth way, a mental way where it's like you learn from experiences. Do you think that these spirits of there's a ghost child, are they able to develop, you know, year after year after year and learn from experiences as we do as humans when we're alive to eventually, you know, become adults and have a mindset of an adult because of those experiences? Or are they forever kind of stuck in a way of thinking of a child?
The fascinating answer to that question that I've come across is that they choose their age. Children will develop and grow up to a point where they want to be at. This goes back to an investigation I just did probably 3 months ago, up here in Rochester, New York. And we came across a young boy named Michael, and we were talking to him. This is through my second mediums, and I had one of my witches there. And we were talking with Michael, and Michael was 10 years old. And he's been 10 years old for a very long time because that's what he wanted to be. Mm-hmm. And so they can choose their age. They know exactly how old they want to be. And so Michael, who I just met recently, is 10 years old, and that's who that's where he's going to stay.
Obviously, this is all conjecture and opinion, but let's say you're 10 years old and you're 10 years old for a very long time. Yeah. Do you have a choice on the other side to grow at some point? At some point you're like, I'm sick of being 10, let's go to 11 or older? Because it's funny, now when you're a little kid, all you want to do is grow up, all you want to do is be older, and then when you're an adult, all you want to do is be a kid. Do you think that there's that perspective there? Are they able to age if they so choose on the other side?
Well, that's considering the fact that on the other side that they kind of, you know, adapt a physical characteristic to age.
Yeah.
Because they could age and not change in an energy form at all. You know, if you want to consider, you know, their age increasing, going from, you know, 10 to 11 to 12, that would just be like their knowledge increasing. It wouldn't be, you understand what I mean?
So physically they can stay what they want, but they can end up having the mindset of an 80-year-old if they... I mean, because that growth doesn't stop. It's not like, because it's an interesting thing. You know, the human brain only develops, you know, in certain ways at certain times of life. So if you are sitting there at 8 years old and you're just repeating that over and over and over, there may not necessarily be the growth that we would think would be would develop because the brain would not be to the place of developing. But again, we're talking about a ghost.
So
there's not necessarily the same sort of principles that we're working with.
And
obviously this is all conjecture, but it's such an interesting thing to think about where you could have a child ghost or something that looks like the spirit of a child, but they may have the knowledge of someone far older than you because they've been around longer, essentially.
Yes, they've seen more, they experienced more, they understand the other side, you know, much more than we do.
Yeah.
So their spiritual growth never stops.
Sure.
But as far as the age that they choose to be, that they can pick.
That's interesting.
Yes.
Is it something that, you know, if these, do you believe that these children, you know, had passed on from this earth at like a young age?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and they chose to stay that young age.
Because the question would be, again, it's all, you know, conjecture. You die at, you know, 40. Can you, when you die, can you go and say, I like 12 better. I'm going to go, can I be 12 again? Or after you, do you have to kind of pick where you're going to be at or kind of be where you're at where you pass?
I don't think that's impossible, but I've never heard of that. I never heard of anybody going back in age like that.
Yeah. It's an interesting thing, you know, because there's obviously the possibilities.
and I think
sometimes we think there's far more possibilities than there really are on the other side. Like, boom, you're dead. Suddenly you have all the knowledge in the world. I don't know about that. I think a lot of times it's like you're more confused here now because you're in a new world you don't know anything about.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about when you were in was it elementary school where you... Yes. We're looking out the window, and this is interesting, and you would see something, you described it as like a UFO crash into a hillside, and you're pointing out the window. Walk me through that experience.
I can picture it clear as day. The elementary school I went to was in a little one-stoplight town called Branchport, New York, and the school since then has been changed into a post office. It's been changed into, I think now it's a museum for the Finger Lakes. And I was like in the second grade, and the town of Branchport, it's in the middle of like these rolling hills of the Finger Lakes. So there's large hills on every side, and it's beautiful, absolutely beautiful. But I remember because the window that was in my classroom that I was looking out, I was looking east at the time. There was a large rolling hill, you know, off in the distance, probably about a mile. And I remember sitting there and the teacher's talking. I remember what she was saying. But then I remember looking out the window again and I remember seeing like this large flash of light, and I could see metallic inside of it. And I saw it go right inside to the hillside. I remember seeing smoke coming up. I remember seeing flames just from a small area in between the trees, and then smoke coming up. And then I alerted the teacher. I'm like, look outside.
Yeah.
And she ran to the window, looked outside, couldn't see anything. And I sat there for, you know, the remainder of the class period, just looking out and just watching the smoke billow from the hillside. And I never heard anything more after that as far as any reports of something happening, but I definitely saw it. I still remember it clear as day right now.
And how interesting is that? Because so often we hear the stories like you were just describing where it was, you know, a child or a person or something, but you saw like an event happening out in the distance and a UFO at that. I mean, did your mind assign it to have been a UFO or do you think it could have been something else that you were witnessing but you were thinking must be a UFO?
No, I was a kid at the time. I was 7 or 8 at that point, and I immediately took it as a UFO, as an alien. Yeah, something that I would, you know, see in a cartoon, but in real life.
So what do you think you were seeing when you look at this all these years later?
I really think I saw some kind of a paranormal occurrence of something hitting the hillside, a large paranormal, I don't know if it was a being or a craft of some sort. I have a feeling, you know, my thought is everything is based on vibrations, and I feel my vibrations have always been higher to where I could kind of hit the spiritual realm that the other side kind of walks on at times.
Yeah.
And so I'm able to see things that other people can't see because my vibrations are higher. So that allows me to see things on the other side that make vibrations. And so I think I was seeing a paranormal, you know, occurrence that that something did hit the side of the hill. But as far as what it was, I mean, it could have been UFO. You know, UFOs are definitely considered paranormal and could be, you know, derivative of the, you know, vibration levels. And so I really think that something did happen. Something did hit. And it's just, I was only the one to be able to see it because I matched the vibration levels that allowed me to see it.
Did you think that when you saw this, you were seeing something in real time that was going on? Or was it something that was like a, you know, an image of something that happened in the past? Almost like you're almost seeing like a different frequency. You're seeing a different dimension almost is kind of what we're talking about with vibrations, right?
Yeah. At that time, yeah, it was definitely real. I didn't understand, you know, anything different. I just believed what I saw. And I saw it happening. So for me, it was real time. And I still believe it was real time.
Yeah.
I mean, it could have been something different. But, you know, as far as my belief now and my belief then, I definitely saw it happen.
Sure. No, I mean, yeah, without a doubt. It's when you had that moment, you know, you're 7 or 8 years old, you pointed out to the teacher because you're thinking everyone's going to see this because it's clear as day to you. How was that handled? You know, when the teacher's like, no, I'm sorry, there's nothing out there. We're talking about the 80s. We're talking about a different time and place where, you know, there wasn't such there wasn't almost at all in many cases much care for mental health. It was just kind of like, you know, go on the swings for a little while and have yourself an Ecto cooler and call it a day. No one would really, you know, dig into that. Today it would be probably we need to get you to a doctor immediately and get you on some sort of medication.
Right.
So, and I'm not saying that this was that at all, but I mean, just saying how things would be handled so differently today. How was it handled? I mean, and how did you process all of that when others were saying, no, we don't see anything out here?
Luckily, as you just pointed out, things were handled differently back then.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it was brushed off very quickly. You know, she did go to the window. She did look. She is like, what happened? What'd you see? And I'm like, something just crashed in the hillside. It's right there.
Yeah.
And she looked and she said, well, I don't see anything. Are you sure you saw something? And I said, yes, it's right there. And so she said, okay, we'll keep an eye on it. And so then she walked back. The other kids, you know, some of them were looking, some walked up to the window, some laughed at me or kind of laughed, you know, kind of like this kid's crazy.
Yeah.
But then it was just brushed to the side.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it wasn't taken seriously. I understand the point of view.
Sure.
I understand what they were thinking.
Sure.
Yeah.
Have you ever, me personally, I've kept in touch with a lot of teachers over the years, you know, through social media and stuff. I'm just curious, and it's a long shot, but did you ever keep in touch with that specific teacher and bring that up again as an adult going, I remember seeing this. Do you remember me pointing this out?
No, it's nothing I would ever reach out again. No, it's been 40 years, but it's nothing. I mean, it would be something that, you know, if I happened to run into her, you know, outside of school, you know, years later, then I definitely would have. But yeah, as far as my elementary school teachers, once the school was shut down when I was in a third grade, and those teachers, I'm not even sure what happened to them. They didn't transfer because I went to Penn Yan after that.
Okay.
They didn't transfer to the Penn Yan district. So I'm not even sure what happened to them, but I've never seen any of them again.
Just to be an interesting one, you know, to see if that stood out or if she remembers that. It's a good question for a teacher, you know, to share. You know, I had this experience, whether you remember this or not. Then ask them, you know, did you have other students that ever said things like that over the tenure of your career? You know, things like that, because, you know, kids say a lot of things and kids experience so many things, and who better, you know, or who more likely to have experienced them or experienced the reaction of a child experiencing them than the teacher, someone who's around them in mass, you know, all day long. What an interesting thing. So you got into later years and you decided, hey, you know what? I like you, young lady. Let's go to the cemetery. And I can't say I differ in all that much, because in early dating years, like, you know, 15, 16, that sort of stuff, I too took girls to the cemetery thinking this is a really cool place. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I did that because the cemetery is where I was comfortable, but it's also where, you know, I would get that adrenaline rush of, you know, coming close with a spirit or having, you know, just being around them. I would crave that feeling. of you know, being in the presence of a spirit. And it just gave me that excitement, that adrenaline rush, you know, that some people get by going to a baseball game, you know.
Sure.
And I've never been into sports or anything like that, and so that was kind of like my outlet, you know, that's what I kind of craved, was that feeling I got, that adrenaline I got from being around spirits and being around the other side, you know. And it's just being around, you know, the who knows what it could be, you know, kind of situation. And so, yeah, I spent a lot of time, you know, up in the, you know, walking around, you know, the cemeteries and mm-hmm. looking at the cool tombstones. And there was some like, you know, above ground, you know, like casket tombstones, or, you know, they're cement, but they were shaped like caskets, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And yeah. And so I always found that very fascinating. I was, you know, just drawn to it. And so, yeah, you know, I would meet a girl and I agreed to go out, you know, we go get ice cream. Then the next thing you know, I'm pulling into the cemetery. And they'd be like, what are you doing? I'm like, have you ever checked this out? It's really cool up here. Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean,
and that was the end of the date.
Yeah. A lot of good first dates.
Let me ask you this. You know, as you, you know, you realized that, you know, you had this ability over time and that you, you know, you were a bit different. You know, you had some senses that others necessarily did not have. Did it take, did you ever run into anybody prior to joining a group that had those sort of sensibilities, or did you just kind of put that on the back burner and just try to, you know, fit in?
I definitely put it on the back burner. It was just in the back, you know, something in the back of my mind. And it was nothing I talked about publicly because I thought I was alone in it. And yeah, so I never knew anybody else, never, that had the same, you know, interest, abilities that I did. Mm-hmm. No, it was something that, you know, I would have needed somebody to kind of walk right up to me and say, hi, my name is so-and-so and I see ghosts.
Sure.
You know, that's what it would have taken for me to open up about it.
That wraps up part one of our conversation with Jay. In part two, what made Jay want to take his group more spiritual versus aggressive? What were the pros and cons of being aggressive, if there are any pros, when communicating with spirits? What life-changing lessons did Jay learn from Native American elders about the spirit world? What was the most crucial thing learned over his 20 years investigating the dead? Those questions and more in part two. Until next time for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.